VK6ARN, News West. We are a community organisation and we've been serving up the best amateur radio news in Australia since 1931.
Hi there, this is Clinton, VK6FCRC, and welcome to News West for the 11th of February 2024. Now with the show.
Good morning, campers. The month of May is not far away, and that means it's time to mark on the calendar the third annual Southern Electronics Group Man Up Ham Camping Weekend of the May 17th to 19th. If you haven't been before, ham camping is a casual weekend getaway for hams and other registered HF users like AusTravelNet and VKS737 and their significant others to drag the swag, the van or the tent down to Man Up Sports Ground for a weekend of radio and social activity. There's plenty of room to camp. There's some big trees to throw a line over, hot showers, a camp kitchen, terrific fire pit to sit around after dark, and of course, time to sit and chat over the weekend with like-minded radio enthusiasts. Food and drinking water is BYO. The kitchen and amenities are powered, but there's no power available for campsites. It's been known to rain, fog, and then bright sunshine, often on the same day, so you need to come prepared. Camping is the usual low price of $10 per person per night. There'll be a square card reader on the weekend available and SEG can take online payments. Boyart Brook has a great car museum and other attractions if you want to visit town 15 minutes away while you're here. We maintain a Ham Camption Facebook page for up-to-date information and you can contact me at VK6EK, that's Victor Kilo Sierra India X-ray Echo Kilo at gmail.com. We hope to see you there. This is Darren, VK6EK, for the Southern Electronics Group.
If you happen to listen to the right part of the 80 metre band on a Tuesday evening, you might hear something that sounds like this. The CQQRS net has been running every single Tuesday for the last 2 years and has been unbelievably popular. There are usually half a dozen, a dozen, and a couple of times up to 18 stations, popping in and out when they can over the 4 or 5 hours. The aim is to encourage new CW operators to have a go at slow CW in a safe and really friendly environment, where slow speed and lots of mistakes are par for the course. It's all about having a go, starting with a basic call sign and RST exchange, then over time getting better and better. The net also attracts its fair share of old-timers who enjoy helping others to have a go or just to enjoy the banter. So this might be just the opportunity you've been waiting for to have a go at transmitting on CW, or perhaps just to stop the contacts rusting up on your key. Doesn't matter whether you're brand new to the code or if you're an old-timer who would like to have a bit of fun and help encourage new operators by having simple, safe QSOs at their speed, we'd love to have you join in. The net starts at 0900 Zulu every Tuesday on 80 metres between 3540 and 3570 kHz, and there's stations in the west, east and in between, listening out for your CQQRS call. For more information and to receive our weekly CQQRS RagChew newsletter, contact me, Mark, VK6QI, via my email address on qrz.com, or you can email me direct, mark.bosma@icloud.com. That is mark.bosma@icloud.com. Too much switch mode power supply hash on 80 metres? This might be the incentive to do something about it. With a cheap noise canceller costing less than $100, 80 metres could be easier than you think. So once again, Tuesdays from 0900 Zulu until late, between 3540 kHz and 3570 kHz. Cheers from Mark, VK2KI and VK6QI.
Hi, this is Steve, VK6SJ. This week I'm relaying the second part of part two of Barry Burns, VK6ADI's journey through amateur radio that we started last week. In 1974, on Christmas Eve, my ham activities came to a halt from a visit from Cyclone Tracy, converting our elevated home into a dance floor and my Radio Shack equipment into a kit form of radio components. My Stobie pole antennas ended up on my neighbour's roof. Another future story of our survival during and after the cyclone. The family was evacuated by aircraft to Adelaide while I stayed behind as part of the workforce to help clean up the mess left by Cyclone Tracy. I had a part of my home restored by the armed forces with material brought up to Darwin on the aircraft carrier HMAS Melbourne, and this allowed me to have accommodation to live in. There was plenty of soup kitchens around in Darwin, so I had no problem in getting a feed. Great thing also, we had free beer for a while. In February 1975, I was given an airfare and 2 weeks R&R leave by the NT government to spend with my family in Adelaide. I had to have a special passport to be allowed back into Darwin. On my next R&R leave to Adelaide, I heard that Kenwood had put out a HF transceiver called the TS-520. I contacted the SA agent and went around to his shop to have a look at it, and immediately fell in love with the radio and walked out of the shop with one tucked under my arm. When I got back to Darwin, I set the TS-520 up using the repaired G5RV, and the world was at my fingertips. I later bought the Kenwood 6 and 2 metre transverter for the 520 so I could operate SSB on 6 and 2 metres. I had my house suitably repaired and power restored, so the NTA administration allowed my XYL Judy to come back, but our 4 children still had to stay in South Australia. Judy's mum took the 2 girls, and my father, VK5UJ, took the 2 boys until they were allowed to come back to Darwin at the end of the year. This is where amateur radio was a godsend, as my father and I kept in touch on 20 metres 2 or 3 times a week with news and updates. We had quite a following from the SWLs, as we received quite a few letters and cards from them. I later upgraded my HF antenna system to a Hills 13 metre winch up tower and a high gain TH3 Mark III Yagi. Darwin then was a good place for DXing and contests. In the late 1980s, the Darwin Amateur Radio Club members got an interest in CNET. That's Southeast Asia Net, from Gary VK8GW, who attended some of the conventions. Darwin Amateur Radio Club hosted the CNET convention in 1992 and 1997 with great success, and I became a CNET controller for over a decade, running the net every Sunday night on 14.320 kHz at 1200 Zulu. Radio Australia closed down after the extensive damage it received from Cyclone Tracy. I was kept on as part of a maintenance team for taking care of the station until a decision was made by the Telstra management of the future of Radio Australia on Cox Peninsula NT. At this stage, I was approached by the NT government and offered a technical officer position in their newly formed radio communications group under their OIC, Ted Fuller. I accepted their offer and transferred over to the RCG, and after Ted Fuller retired, I was promoted to OIC. After a while, with increasing workload and staff, the position was elevated to Senior Tech Officer 3, of which I was successful and put in charge as manager of 30 staff, including technical administration and apprentices. In 1995, I retired after 40 years in the public service, and Judy and I in 1996 bought a 100-acre property in Beverly East, WA, and we sold our home in Darwin, and in January 97 drove down to Perth to escape to the country lifestyle. A new adventure began as a gentleman farmer. And thanks for listening. This is Steve, AK6SJ, with not an episode of Did You Know, but Barry's memoirs, and look forward to hearing part 3 very soon. You've been listening to News West.
This is News West, your amateur radio news on VK6ARN, originating on the News West Linked Repeater Network and HF Relays.
If your club is supposed to be a not-for-profit, why are you selling hamburgers and other things to make a profit? Welcome to Club Focus, and today I'll be talking about what the term not-for-profit means to your club. I've often heard people railing against an organisation that claims to be not-for-profit, making money on various scales, usually depending on the size of the organisation. To get to the heart of the matter, let's look at how not-for-profit is implanted in our rules. I think it's fair to say that most amateur radio clubs in Western Australia are incorporated associations. Each club will have based their rules, that is, their constitution, on the model rules provided by the Department of Fair Trading. So, right up front, just after the objects, is this paragraph. The property and income of the association shall be applied solely towards the promotion of the objects of the association, and no part of that property or income may be paid or otherwise distributed directly or indirectly to members except in good faith in the promotion of those objects, including, without limitation, payments by the way of reimbursement of expenses or remuneration to any officer, employee or other person doing work for the association. And then at the other end of the document is this one. Distribution of surplus property on winding up of the association. If upon the winding up or dissolution of the association there remains, after satisfaction of all its debts and liabilities, any property whatsoever, the same must not be paid to or distributed among the members or former members. The surplus property must be given or transferred to another association incorporated under the Act, which has similar objects and which is not carried out for the purposes of profit or gain to its individual members, and which association shall be determined by the resolution of the members. So those two clauses make it clear that the principle of not-for-profit means that the members of the organisation may not personally profit, in cash or kind, from the activities of the group. It's also clear that reimbursement or payment to a member for services provided to the club are not counted as profit. There's nothing to say that the organisation couldn't sell 1,000 hamburgers in a day and making a tidy profit. Or they could purchase a property and sell it at a later date and make a profit. We're amateur radio, we could run a hamfest. We can make a profit as a group. There's a clear line drawn between the club making a profit and applying that income towards achieving its objects and the club making a profit and splitting the proceeds between its members. The former is enshrined in the rules and the latter is forbidden. What you need to do with this information is to stash it in your memory, because sooner or later someone will try to say that the club isn't allowed to raise the funds by making a profit because it's a not-for-profit association. Apart from being inaccurate, the discussion is time-wasting and its proponents are often not inclined to like being proven wrong. But we can change that, can't we? It won't happen overnight, but it will happen. I'm Bob, VK6POP.
Hi, just a little note about VK6RRG and the WAG Technical and General Net. Having it run every Sunday morning on VK6RLM, that's 146.750, or Channel 3 in the old money. And it starts at 10:30 a.m. this morning. Of course, if you're listening in the evening, it's next week.
Hello from Dennis, VK6AKR for the WAVHF Group. My apologies for the scarcity of notes from the WAVHF group, but 2024 has been successful so far, if a bit chaotic. Our sad news, which some may have already heard, is the passing of one of our founding members, Dr. Wally House, VK6KZ, now Silent Key. Wally was licensed as VK6ZAA back in the days of Z calls, operators who had not undertaken the Morse code exam. Wally subsequently passed that test and relicensed as VK6KZ. He passed away at the ripe old age of 90 and had all his faculties and sense of humour to the end, which was brought on with a massive heart attack. He was a good friend to many in the club, a mentor, and always to be relied upon to cut through the fluff and get to the nitty-gritty. His interest in signal propagation and the higher bands is legendary, and he held several distance microwave records. Thank you and rest in peace, Wally. Several club members have been helping to clear out his shack, actually shacks plural, as two whole bedrooms and every square centimetre of space in his garage and basement rooms was packed with commercial and quality homebrew gear. Some of the premier items will have been sold at Pargfest yesterday. The remainder, and there is a lot, will vie for attention at a garage sale at his QTH in Melville Heights, as well as a veranda sale at Wireless Hill. Dates to be announced. Please be reminded that the WAVHF group will soon cease to renew the licences for several beacons, the ones in rural and remote areas of the state. An invitation has and continues to be extended to any or all who would like to form a WA Beacon group or similar to support and develop beacons in VK6. Be in touch with me if you have an itch to start such a group. And a reminder, please, to get your logs in for the summer UHF VHF Field Day and the Ross Hull Memorial Field Day. Your score will not count, neither will those of your QSO partners, if you do not submit your logs. Until next time, be sun safe. Slip, slop and slap to avoid skin cancers. 73 from Demis, VK6AKR for the WA VHF Group.
Only a month and a bit away is the John Moyle Memorial Field Day. So what is it? The John Moyle Memorial Field Day is an Australian amateur radio contest, and it's called a field day because its purpose is to encourage us to operate a portable station, ostensibly to prepare us for any future emergency needs. We could argue all day about whether or not amateur radio in this country and day and age has a valid role in emergencies, but let's focus on the contest instead. Firstly, who was John Moyle? John was an Australian amateur who saw the value of using radio to coordinate and manage responses to emergencies such as bushfires. And to cut a long story short, he was responsible for the introduction in the late 1940s, I think it was, or the 50s, of the use of radio in emergency response services. Based, I assume, on the assumption that where all else fails and amateur radio is called to the fore, our stations would be operated portable. The contest rules about portable operation are quite clear. Your station may not be connected to any permanent antenna infrastructure and must be powered with portable power such as batteries, generators, solar, wind, etc., and must not be powered by mains power. Although I'm a camping tragic and I like to run portable stations from a bush camp, it's not the only way to operate portable. You could set up in a park across the road from your house, or operate your mobile rig in the car park of a nice spot somewhere. It's up to you how you do it, bearing in mind the rules that define portable operation. If it's not possible or desirable for you to run a portable station, don't despair. There's also a home station category where you can be plugged into everything. So we're all catered for, but there is one notable exception. Multiple operator stations may not enter the home station category. Multiple operator stations must be portable. Your entry could be in the 24-hour category or the 6-hour category. Especially in the 24-hour category, you don't have to work 24 contiguous hours. You can if you like. You can work bits of it throughout the 24-hour period, depending on your stamina mostly. The John Moyle is on the third weekend of March, a month and a bit away, and at this stage you ought to be making up your mind about how and where you'd like to take part in the contest. I'm planning to operate a station at a bush camp about 25 kilometres southeast of the lakes, and if there's interest from others in participating, I'm happy to make it a multi-operator entry in the contest using a club call sign. You just need to know that it's 100% self-contained camping, and caravans just won't make it onto the site. So how about other clubs getting together to put on a multi-operator entry for the John Moyle? There are plenty of places where this can be done in a car park if you're not into camping. With this spate of heat waves we're having, I think we should all have a plan B in case of extreme fire hazard days. March can still be very hot.
Hi there. Due to producer burnout and Foundations of Amateur Radio coming out Saturday instead of Friday, every episode of Foundations of Amateur Radio from now on will be delayed by 1 week.
This is News West, your amateur radio news on VK6ARN, originating on the News West Linked Repeater Network and HF Relays.
You may notice that News West has been light on for content lately, and I've been playing a lot of repeat stories, but you can help us to change that by sending your stories or contributions through to newswest@vk6.net.
Hi there, it's Clinton, VK6FCRC, back with you again. Unfortunately, there's no helpline this week because Roy's in hospital, so we've got a repeat episode for you guys this week.
Good morning, this is Roy VK, 6X-ray Victor with this week's helpline, the 21st of January 2024, for radio amateurs and shortwave listeners everywhere. Today I have the following for you: an Mtron grid dip meter, model Echo Delta Mike-1, frequency range 1.5 to 250 megahertz, as original cardan and manual, as new, $300 for that good dip meter. There's an Oscar Block Power and SWR meter, model SWR200, frequency range 3.5 to 150 MHz, power 2 kilowatts, up to 2 kilowatts from 2 watts, and original carton and manual for that, and asking $100. There's also a Kenwood Tango Sierra 711 Alpha 2-meter all mode transceiver, $300. There's a Kenwood TS811 Alpha transceiver, multi-mode 70-centimeter transceiver, $300. There's an ICOM IC3200 Alpha and power supply, 144 to 430 MHz dual band transceiver, $350. And there's the Uniden UHF-CB, $100. Contact Barry on his email, bravo.juliet.burns@bigpond.com, or mobile 0428 959 771. I'll go again, bravo.juliet.burns@bigpond.com, or mobile 0428 959 771. I also have a premium software-defined transceiver, model Flex 6700 transceiver, 3 years old, but in pristine condition. Comes with expert advice if you require any, and version 3 firmware, asking $7.5K or $7,500. And while it's the earlier version, it comes with the latest version controller. Amplifier was sold. Call Steve for that Flex transceiver, 6700 transceiver. Please call Steve on mobile 0447 767 518, 0447 767 518, or email to steve@kennedy-sierrajuliet.com.au. I'll say that again, Sierra Tango Echo Victor Echo, spelling Steve, @Kennedy, Kilo Echo November November Echo Delta Yankee, -sierrajuliet.com.au. And that's all I have for you for this week. If you'd like any items for next week in the helpline, please call me or email me on roy.watkins@bigpond.com. That's romeooscaryankee.watkins@bigpond.com, or vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. 7-3 until next time. Cheers for now.
Hi there, it's Clinton, VK6FCRC, back with you. And did you know that NewsWest is now on YouTube? Type in youtube.com/@NewsWest weekly podcast dash Kilo Zulu 7 Yankee Charlie. Oh, and before I go, I'd like to thank those watching on YouTube or ATV, the readers, and you for listening. I'd also like to thank our team, the broadcasters, and those submitting content each week. Please stand by now for callbacks after the broadcast, or head over to the VK6.net website and fill out the form so we know how many people are listening each week.